You're listening to Gillespie, Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com.
And welcome to Gillespie here on this Tuesday night in Excellence on FTRradio.com. I'd like to welcome everybody for joining us. I want to thank those who were just listening to the Stark Factor for sticking around there in the chat room. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoy the show. This week was supposed to be our Christmas show, but, you know, sometimes when you start planning a Christmas party a little late, sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're going to try to, you know, Christmas up the joint with holiday bumpers kind of stuff. Anyway, it wouldn't be the Christmas season without our good friend, Susie Moore, the Smoozy Q. Susie, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Josh. How are you?
Well, I'm getting into the Christmas spirit. We are a week away, officially.
Yeah.
And I conveniently have taken care of Christmas shopping via my wife, because she does all the Christmas shopping.
Oh, isn't that handy?
It is, I tell you.
My wife has not gotten on it just yet. She's still got a lot to do.
A lot Slacker. To do. Slacker. Well, my wife, she's wonderful enough to tell me her birthday falls in the same month of December. Our youngest daughter, her birthday falls in the month of December.
Mm-hmm.
And our oldest, her birthday is just after January 1st.
Uh-huh.
So it's an expensive time around here.
Sure.
But, you know, everyone seems to be taken care of, and my wife was kind enough, Mrs. Silk, as we mentioned last week, you know, we were talking about it being her birthday.
Yeah.
Mrs. Silk, she is kind enough to email me direct Amazon links to stuff that she wants. And I'm thinking...
Smart lady.
Very smart. Just appealing to the male nature of, one, putting everything off, and two, finding the easiest way possible to get it, no matter the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you put things off, all of a sudden prices go up because they know you need stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, Christmas is taken care of in the house.
Yay.
One of three birthdays within, you know, a very compressed time period is taken
mm-hmm.
care of. And Mrs. Silk thanks everyone for their birthday wishes if there happened
good.
To be last week. Because I was celebrating, you know, her birthday with her, so I wasn't actually in the chat room last week.
I know, but that's a good reason to not be there.
Yeah, if you're going to have one. Unlike Mark Warner, who skips out every freaking week, not just on the show.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean,
he's got some meeting or something.
I got a meeting. Oh, sure. Mm. Oh, thanks for getting a guest, but I mean, outside of that, you know, don't even show up in the chat room or on the show. And when he does show up on the show, he's cranky.
He doesn't write, he doesn't call.
What are we to do?
He doesn't send us flowers anymore.
Okay. Now, you're no. No. Because now
you
I'm hearkening.
Want me to break into song then?
Now we're hearkening back to Fingers Bash. And you know how, you know, people chicken up the joint. We don't.
We need to Christmas up the joint, not chicken up.
That's right. That's right. We need a little Christmas jolly fun around here. anyway, so we're going to break into some jolly fun here by diving right into the fiscal cliff, like where we left off last week.
You mean diving right off of it?
Yes. Yes. We're going to dive right off the cliff. We're cliff divers. Cliff diving is pretty popular these days in some parts
yes,
of the world.
Is.
Greece. I hear it's very popular in Greece. But obviously, you know, the fiscal cliff issue is still something that is being discussed. And but with all the events that have taken place since we last spoke a week ago, and unfortunately there have been a lot,
mm-hmm.
This has been kind of taken, you know, a backseat to many issues. But you, because like Brodigan, you owe it to the people, have... sort of kept up on this a bit. What are you hearing, Susie?
A bit is a good description of it, because I certainly have not been glued to the news insofar as the fiscal cliff stuff goes. But as I understand it, either yesterday, I think it was yesterday, Boehner put on the table the idea of tax hikes for the uber rich, in other words, those making over $1 million a year, as one potential bargaining chip, which of course sent everyone into a tizzy, because it sent everyone on the right into hysterics about the possibility of any type of tax hike, tax rate raise, anything like that. And it sent those on the left into a tizzy, because of course that's just not sufficient. That's not going to do it. It's nowhere near what we need. I read an article today that talked about how much revenue that would anticipate that would generate. And it's something, I want to say something in the $700 billion range, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I'll try and look that up if I can. But
so in a sense, we could almost pay for the stimulus?
Maybe.
Was the stimulus $700 billion? I want to say it was $700 billion.
Yeah, well, there was TARP and there was stimulus. I thought one was $800, I thought. But, the numbers, you get up to that kind of that level. What do the numbers really matter? I mean, it's all just numbers.
Seriously. I mean, Washington, it is a Christmas season. It is a Christmas season, so there, you know, we all know that Christmas is about giving and receiving, and Congress just likes to receive. There's no giving unless it's something we don't like.
Well, yeah, no. I was going to say they give us a lot, but they give us a lot of stuff that we don't want.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh. Well, you know, and again, as we discussed last week regarding the fiscal cliff, it's that, okay, we have to understand that if we are going to have any hope of getting something accomplished, that, yes, tax increases probably do need to be on the table. I like where Boehner is starting. I mean, if tax increases have to be agreed to, I like where he's starting. One, because $250,000, I mean, again, people who make $250,000, they are not millionaires. They may have, I mean, a lot of these people are small business owners, mm-hmm. and that is their gross income. I mean, that's not counting all the salaries that they may have to pay, or even the 1099s they may have to pay, all the equipment that they have to pay for. And I tell you, you know, I don't know if it's this way in every state, but at least I know in Indiana, we still have the tax where you have to pay. If you are a small business or any kind of business, really, you have to pay for your equipment yearly. You're taxed.
Right.
And so if you're making $250,000 after you get everything paid for, including the taxes, you're barely scraping by.
Right.
Because if you're a good business owner, you make sure your employees get paid first, because then they'll actually stick around.
Well,
there is that.
Here's the problem, though. Mm-hmm. If you're just looking at it for, you know, I mean, the whole mentality of who needs to have it stuck to them, mm-hmm. so that we can say we're getting our agenda met, is bass ackwards.
Because no, you're right.
The idea behind, you know, and I'm using the term punishing in a broad way, but punishing those at a certain level by raising their tax rates, because that's palatable to most of the rest of the country, because it doesn't affect them and it's just the rich guys getting it stuck to them. Mm-hmm. It still buys into that whole mentality. And, you know, taxation isn't supposed to be about punishment.
That's
it's
true.
Supposed to be about revenue generation. Now, the article I did read earlier today, you know, yes, if you increase tax rates on that segment of the population, it is going to generate some revenue, so that's fine, but there are other ways that can be done, and I don't know that that's necessarily the answer. Still, I understand what Boehner's trying to do here. He's throwing out little nibbles, I guess.
It's, well, I think it's a fig leaf in the talks to get, farther in talking about cuts. You know,
yes.
I saw Congresswoman Edie Bernice Johnson. From, I believe she's from Oklahoma. I can't remember right off the top of my head. But I saw her on Real World with Neil Cavuto last week.
Yes.
And that was just, I mean, wow. You can't even come up with one thing. And she's like, well, if you just shut up, I can.
I know.
And
that was just ridiculous.
It was. And when he did shut up, you know, for lack of a better phrase there, She still didn't supply anything that entire interview. And it drives me crazy, this whole idea of the balanced approach. Because it's not balanced. And it reminds me of an old Simpsons episode. I may have referenced this before on the show, maybe a year or two ago, when I was talking about my whole beef with the concept of balanced approach. And it was an episode of The Simpsons where they kind of flash forward to see what it was like. Like, they ran into some, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But anyway, they flash forward, Lisa's president. The country is in deep economic despair, and she needs to come up with some way to raise taxes, but she doesn't call it raising taxes. She calls it a revenue adjustment or something like that. But I mean, it's made to sound like, oh, hey, this is great. My revenue is going to be adjusted up. No, your revenue is going to be adjusted down. But it's only when Bart breaks, you know, the code and informs everybody that it's a tax hike that people start getting upset.
Mm-hmm.
But no one is calling this. I mean, Boehner's calling it a tax hike, and to a certain degree,
he's acknowledging that.
Yeah, and Boehner and Obama actually is sort of acknowledging it's a tax hike too. But he's like, well, it's patriotic. We got to do it. No, we have income disparity, and we need to balance it.
You know, and the other thing that's even more telling as far as Obama's concerned is he's indicated that he's not interested in that kind of discussion at all. I mean, you know, he's insisting that any kind of tax rate increase would have to be on those making above the $250,000 mark, and that he's not even willing to bend. There's no negotiating there. So if nothing else, maybe this is sort of exposing his recalcitrance, if you will.
It is. And, you know, I understand some of the conservatives out there who say, just let them drive it off the cliff, make the Democrats own it. But trust me, people, Democrats will not own this, and the media will not let them own it. This will be the Republicans' fault, regardless.
Oh, no matter what, it'll be blamed on the Republicans.
And this is what infuriates me even more. If, you know, Boehner gives in, Republicans will blame Republicans.
Well, sure.
People, we're screwing ourselves. All right? This needs to be a team sport. So when the team captain comes up with a play, even if we may not all like it, at some point, we need to move forward, and I don't know. I don't want to come to Boehner's defense too much, because I don't think he's been a great leader, but he's been a heck of a lot better than one Mitch McConnell, and two, someone's going to have to give at some point. The government won't shut down. We can't let it shut down, because we'll lose that media war too.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week too, with negotiating that sort of thing. I mean, you have to be willing to at least float different potential bargaining chips, and to see what the other side's going to blink, what's going to make them blink, and where you might have some give, and where you might have some room to move things forward. And you know, I don't know what's going on in Boehner's head. I don't know if is he caving, or is he just trying to expose Obama, or what.
Sure.
But you know, the bottom line is, something's going to have to be done here, or we're going to go right off that cliff. And maybe in the long run, maybe that's what we need to do. I don't know. I can't pretend to be smart enough to know, but you know, I'm not going to damn him for floating ideas out there.
Exactly. I'm not either.
Apparently I'm, you know, that maybe
you're
that's
the minority.
Blasphemous.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I do want to mention that earlier I said, I thought it was supposed to generate $700 billion. No, it was supposed to generate $450 billion. If you tax the top, if you increase the tax rate on those making over $1 million.
Oh, that's still sad. Well, so, you know who can give us some insight on this?
Who?
That would be Indiana Senator Dan Coats.
I've heard of him.
So we hope to have him coming up next. Yes. This all depends on Senator Harry Reid. If he lets Dan Coats call into the show. I'll explain this at some other point in future shows. But we hope to have Dan Coats on next. If we do not have Dan Coats, you'll hear about it. We'll still come back. Susie and I will still be here.
We'll be here.
Yeah. But anyway.
Harry Reid can't stop us.
That's right. That's right. Take that, Harry Reid. So anyway, stick around. Coming up next, you'll either hear Dan Coats or you won't. That's all I can say. That's all I can say.
Killing me.
I know. Well, we'll find out next. So stick around. You're listening to FTR or Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back.
Fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am pleased to welcome back to the show. It's been a while, but I am pleased to have him on the show, Indiana Senator Dan Coats. Senator Coats, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. Nice to be on the program with you.
Yeah. Well, I know that this is obviously an incredibly busy time for you right now and the rest of your Senate colleagues. Susie and I have kind of already discussed what's going on with the fiscal cliff, at least from early reports. But we wanted to get, obviously, your perspective of what is happening, especially going on in the Senate. We know that there have been developments, at least with Speaker Boehner, the plans that he's proposing. But what are you seeing from the Senate side?
Well, not enough. We get our hopes up when it looks like we're making some progress, only to have the latest proposals shot down by the White House. I think John Boehner has been more than willing to address what the president is asking for, at least made several efforts to move in his direction, all of it based, of course, on this being, quid pro quo. That is, you know, we will take up your issues and consider them if you'll take up ours. What we've seen is the White House and a president obsessed with raising taxes, but we started this whole thing with a huge deficit and ever-growing debt, excessive spending, well over $1 trillion a year, and nothing coming out of the White House in terms of reining in spending. You can just raise taxes until the cows go home and not begin to address our problem unless you get out the overspending, well over $1.5 trillion, and I think approaching over $5 trillion in just the last 4 years. And so if we don't get some kind of effort in dealing with that excessive spending, we're just going to continue to find ourselves careening toward ever more fiscal cliffs.
Now, I think we hear the term fiscal cliff so often. What does it exactly mean? I mean, for the kind of the layperson, what does it mean if we happen to go off the fiscal cliff?
Well, all this started back when Congress had this great debate about putting in place some spending reforms. And the promise was that the commitment was, if we go forward with this committee of 12, six Republicans and six Democrats, we will make the penalties, if they don't come to an agreement, we will make the penalties so severe that no one would possibly not come to an agreement. Well, they didn't come to an agreement. And by a date certain, and that date is this December 31st at midnight, automatic cuts will kick in, with tax increases for every American, not just the rich here, tax increases for everybody, with massive cuts to defense spending, well beyond what our military people and defense experts tell us, well beyond what needs to be to keep us safe and secure. The economic analysts basically say the cuts that will happen across the board are so severe that we'll be thrown back into a recession. Unemployment will go up, and a lot of dire things will happen. All of that was designed to produce a result. It didn't produce that result, and so it then got named the fiscal cliff because all of this kicks in automatically on midnight, December 31st.
That's so. Are we looking back basically to the deal that was struck last August, before the August recess, where they had the super committee that was put together? Is that part of that as well? I mean,
it is. That's okay. What precipitated it. And the whole idea was that we'll make it so draconian if the super committee doesn't come together that they will absolutely have to come together. And unfortunately, they didn't. We couldn't get a deal that was accepted by the White House, so the committee couldn't even propose something for us to vote on. I did not support that effort. I thought that this is not the right way to go about it. We needed to be adults and sit down at the table and work out what we all know is the problem facing our country, and that is this ever-increasing deficit spending that's driving us into such a debt hole, and that's going to have dire consequences for the future and dumping on our children and grandchildren obligations and responsibilities that they're just simply not going to be able to handle.
Senator, you mentioned sitting down like adults and discussing this, and I wanted to know a little bit about the process from your end of things. How often are you getting calls or called into meetings to discuss these issues?
Well, I wish I could say often. I would love. I've been giving speeches on the floor. I've been talking my head off here, but I am not part of the negotiations. Nor are any senators part of the negotiations. These negotiations are exclusively between the President and the Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Because the Democrats control the Senate, the President is confident that whatever deal is finally arrived at, if it's to his favor, he will have no problem passing it in the Senate. But the Republicans control the House of Representatives, and as such, the President has to negotiate with Speaker Boehner, who is representing those Republicans, and put a package together that they will pass, or otherwise we won't get an ultimate package that deals with the problem. And so we're frozen out of this, and we're just as frustrated as all of you the people who are listening to this program, and all of you who are sitting back in Indiana wondering, what in the world are they doing down there? We're all wondering the same thing.
Well, I think we know that you're obviously working very hard to, with your colleagues, at least to get as much information as possible. We saw recently that Speaker Boehner has moved on to quote-unquote Plan B, which has unlikely support from a Democrat colleague, former House Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi. And yet, apparently, Senator Reid has already declared that this is a no-go. When you're having difficulty passing, even getting something past the House, but seemingly when things do pass the House, they always stall at the foot of Harry Reid and his leadership in the Senate. I mean, is there any hope that something actually does happen between now and December 31st that can be stomached? I mean, or is the likelihood that we could actually face this fiscal cliff?
Well, there is always hope, and at Christmas time there ought to be more hope. And finding some type of reconciliation here, you are very right about Harry Reid. I tell you, getting up in the morning every day and going to work with Harry Reid as my boss has not been something I look forward to.
I don't blame you.
To put it mildly, it's been extraordinarily frustrating not to be able to debate the real issues, not to have up or down votes, and let the people, you know, either support or yes or our no based on their political ideologies and philosophy. He literally has prevented Republicans in the Senate from offering amendments, from offering legislation. All in terms of trying to protect his own members. And it's been very difficult dealing with them. When I said adults at the table, we have some real problems in this country, but they can be fixed. They can be addressed if people will, I think, put the future of the country ahead of their political desires or their re-election wishes. I'm at a point in life, I hope I've always been this way, but I'm at a point in life where I really been thinking a lot about my children and my grandchildren and what kind of a country we're going to leave them and what kind of a debt we're going to saddle them with And that's what caused me to run in 2010. I wanted to get back into the arena and do something about what I saw was a frightening situation our country was moving toward. And I wanted to be a part of fixing it. And all of 2011, 2012, my first 2 years in the Senate, I was just on a mission to try to bring together a sensible package that would put us on the path to fiscal health. Now, I used Indiana as the model because, as you know, 8 years ago, our governor inherited a big deficit, and we were in a big hole.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we took a number of, and I say we, the governor and the legislature supporting him, and Hoosiers who supported this effort, took a number of steps to put us on a path to fiscal balance. And we exceeded that. We now have a surplus. We're talking about giving taxpayers from Indiana money back because the government says, look at it, it's your money. It's not ours to just spend recklessly. We're the most lean and efficient government of any state in the country. And so that's a wonderful model for us to go forward with at the national level. But what I see is just not addressing this issue, which is so easy. It's, as Mitch Daniels said, it's math, but it's not calculus. It's third grade math. You can't keep spending more money than you take in without running into real trouble. And you can't put your country and the future citizens of your country, our children, grandchildren, in such a hole debt-wise, with debt to China and debt to Saudi Arabia, that they're not going to have the opportunities that we've had to have a good job, to get married and have a family, to buy a home, to raise kids, to save for college. That's the American dream, and that's been the American opportunity, and I see it slipping away.
We're talking with Indiana Senator Dan Coats. Senator Coats, in your first go-around as a senator from Indiana, you served Indiana wonderfully during the 1990s. You were also author of the Line Item Veto, which unfortunately got struck down by the United States Supreme Court. If the Line Item Veto were around today, do you think we'd be in a similar situation?
We would have been in a better situation because this slipping special stuff into bills at the last minute, which haven't gone through the process and had a vote and a debate, would not have been allowed to happen. But the real thing the real issue that didn't get passed, which was my greatest disappointment because we came twice within one vote of passing this, was a balanced budget amendment. That's really mm-hmm. what we need to impose on the federal government. We have a balanced budget amendment in Indiana that requires our state, before that legislature adjourns, they can't be spending more money than's coming in the till. And if we had that balanced budget amendment passed in the 90s when I was there, and we came literally with one vote of making a constitutional amendment,
mm-hmm.
Which would require a balanced budget, I'm sure the states would have ratified it, and we today would not be in this situation because it would make politicians have to stand up to the plate and either be straight out with the people they represent. You can have this, but this is what it's going to cost you in taxes because we cannot go out and borrow to pay for something that we don't know if we're going to be able to pay it back in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, switching gears on you here real quick because we have just a little over a minute remaining. I wanted to get your initial impressions of a new colleague of yours, eventual new colleague. Congressman Tim Scott has been appointed by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley to replace Jim DeMint. What are your initial impressions of Congressman Scott?
I met him today for the first time at Stoon, and he was introduced to our a Republican policy lunch, and we gathered around him and welcomed him with open arms. Here's an African-American who has come up through some really tough situations and now a United States Senator. I think it's just remarkable what his journey, representing a southern former slave state, South Carolina, he's going to be a great addition to our party. Can't wait to start serving with him after the first of the year. So we were pretty excited about all that.
Did you give him a heads up on what it's going to be like to try to work with Harry Reid?
No, I didn't want to tell him that because I was afraid he would resign before he even got here.
Don't want to scare him off.
No, I don't want to scare him off. No, he said, We'll find a way to make this work. But boy, the last thing we want to do is give them reason to say, wait a minute, maybe I'll think about this again.
That's right. That's right. Well, like I said, you are serving Indiana wonderfully in the Senate. I know that as one of your constituents, I've been extremely pleased to have you as my senator, and I thank you for being on tonight's show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I thank you both for what you do, and hope we can do this again sometime.
Excellent. You're listening to Gillespie. We'll be right back after this.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King.
Hi, this is Amelia Hamilton, author of One Nation Under God, a book for little patriots, and you are listening to FTR Radio.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With me, as always, is the Smoozy Q. And as I said before, this is going to be our heavy, heavy segment. Not stuff that we want to talk about, but, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed, especially as, you know, Susie, you're a mother of a young child. I'm a father of three little ones. First of all, I think we should probably get this out of the way. What was your reaction when you first heard the news?
Well, you know, I actually got a news update on my phone while I was still in court Friday morning. I was handling a kind of difficult hearing, and I glanced at my phone and saw just kind of, you know, it didn't even register that there had been a shooting at a school in Connecticut. And I, you know, of course, was like, oh, gosh. But then I kind of put it out of my mind and didn't really focus in on it. And then I got done with that and went into the office, got some work done, but I knew I had to get out of there soon because Friday afternoon was the Christmas pageant at Minnie Q's school. And I had promised I would be there. So I didn't really focus in on any of the news at that point. I just kind of got my work done and headed to our school and then sat through the Christmas pageant with the kind of the mixture of, oh my gosh, it's her last Christmas pageant at the school because she's a fifth grader. She'll be moving on to middle school. So I had that little sort of sniffle bit about that. And then at the same time going, thank God it's her last Christmas pageant at the school. Because as you probably know, the sitting through an hour plus of little kids singing their little Christmas songs is very cute, but it gets a little old too. And so, you know, it wasn't until after that and after the pageant was over, we gave her hugs and said our goodbyes. And then she went on home with her dad. And I came home to my house, and that's when I sat down and turned on the TV and really started absorbing the news and digesting the fact that the enormity of what had happened. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, I sat there with tears running down my face. I couldn't think, you know, what to do next. And one of the first things I did was pick up the phone and text Minnie Q's dad and say, you know, we're really lucky to have just spent the afternoon that we did, and give her an extra hug from me, because here we got to do something celebrating Christmas and celebrating the life of these darling little kids and those poor parents in Connecticut. I can't even wrap my brain around what they must be going through.
It was definitely confusion. And I felt like I actually got more wrapped up in what I was seeing being spewed on the internet, on Facebook and in Twitter, and trying to keep up with the news, but all the terrible reporting, atrocious reporting,
a lot of misinformation
all around, liberal or conservative circles. It was some awful reporting. I think that's something that we need to agree on. I mean, it was annoying to have Fox News constantly giving incorrect information. And if you're a liberal listening to this show, you're probably being like, yeah, always. But no, this time they really got it wrong.
Yeah, and that wasn't a right or left thing. That was just what the news was being put out at the time. And,
yeah, and it's all about a race to report first. How about you get your facts straight before you start reporting? And then I had people, you know, there were people on Twitter who were going crazy on the ban all guns. And there were people who were crazy who were like, we need to arm everyone, including the teachers. And then there was one, a friend of mine, he's a Democrat, but he really infuriated me when he was tweeting out things that he had, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, heard were the reasons behind the shooting. And the reasons were there wasn't enough Jesus in the schools. To which his response was, "I disagree." And I was just like, I didn't engage him because I'm like, not going to do that.
Right.
I will say this, and I don't want this to come off as crass. I really don't. But I will say that I spent the day thrilled that my kids are homeschooled. That they spend the day with my wife and they get their education. And again, she's a Princeton grad, so I feel pretty confident that they're getting a education. But, you know, that made me feel, you know, in a sense, distant from what was going on, but also relieved.
Sure. Sure. I mean, you know, over the next weeks, months, I mean, this situation is going to be examined from so many sides, and there's so many potential causes and variables that have to be looked at. But, you know, anything that you as a parent, or really anyone who's affected by this in any way, can find to take comfort in, they're going to find to take comfort in. Whether it's the belief that if you just ban all guns, everything will be fine, or the belief that if you arm everyone, everything will be fine, or the belief that you know, if your kids are home rather than in a public school, they're a lot safer, which they probably are, just from a statistical standpoint. But, you know, it's, And I don't homeschool my daughter. She does go to public school. And as a matter of fact, I think I mentioned before we came on the air here, just before we were getting started with the show, I actually got a news notification that 4 schools in my area, and when I say in my area, I mean like 5 minutes from my house, are on lockdown right now, including 2 elementary schools, because there was a suicidal armed man running through the woods between the schools.
Jeez.
Now, thankfully, I do happen to know that Minnie Q is home with her dad safe and sound, and I sent another text just to double check and reassure myself, and it wasn't her school, but it was schools that are, like, right next to her school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows what was going on with that? I mean, I don't know that there's much information on that at this point, but, you know, situations like this really give you pause and make you wonder, you know, how can I protect my child? How can I, you know, ever send her out into the world with any confidence that she's going to be safe?
Well, and that is a problem. You know, I watched President Obama's speech Sunday night, and I saw his response on his initial response on Friday, and I thought his initial response on Friday was pretty good.
I did too.
I appreciated it. There were some things that kind of gave me pause, and it sounded like he was wanting to interject politics, but not, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, that's probably just I suppressed my reactionary as much as possible. But still, I know where he stands on guns.
Right.
I know where a lot of these people, especially in the media, they stand on guns. I tried to put that aside as I listened to him talk. It was a little bit more difficult during his speech on Sunday night.
Right.
Because
those were more prepared remarks with more.
Well, not just prepared remarks, but I mean, when he's talking about, you know, we will look at any and all ways to respond to this.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, okay.
They were more agenda driven.
Yeah. And I, again, as I tried to suppress my reactionary, I didn't tweet or do anything in response to this, but my inside, I'm thinking, oh yeah, he's about ready to say that, well, we need to address repealing the Second Amendment. It's dumb, but it was a fear that I honestly expected him to say that because he has the bully pulpit. He very well could, and he could get a lot of support.
Sure.
And it kind of freaked me out a bit, but he didn't say it, and he's waiting until the next session, and I feel like there does need to be an honest discussion.
Now, there does.
I don't think that we need to be any kind of weapons ban. I'm very leery of. I think that what we need to really address here, especially as we look back at the shooting in Aurora, the shooting in Tucson against Congresswoman Giffords, what happened in Newtown, and pretty much when you look at the shooting at the military base a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, these things come down to, in many cases, mental illness. And I don't think that this is a plea to insanity defense, These people are seriously troubled.
Oh yeah.
And the immediate reaction that I saw from liberals, first of all, it was ban all guns and then do mental health. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of morphed into ban all guns.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they were really right, and I think that this is something conservatives even really need to get on board with, is we need to address the mental health system in this country. These, all these boys, and that's essentially what they were. They were just, you know,
yep,
boys, a little older than 20.
Right.
You know, they were seriously disturbed, and there were some issues going on in that poor boy's family.
Sure.
And, you know, it was my wife read an article about, especially, I guess, about this family, that there were two brothers, Ryan and Adam. Adam was mm-hmm. the one who was the shooter. Ryan was initially identified as the shooter, but Ryan, apparently, you know, his parents divorced, and he didn't let that get in the way. And, you know, that didn't become a mental roadblock for him, and he excelled.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, that Adam took the opposite approach and he withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
That was his reaction. And
right.
I don't know, you know, I haven't looked more into this. I don't know how the parents were, you know, kind of playing all this out, what their, you know, roles were in this. But the thing is you basically have a story of two brothers and they both took completely opposite approaches to what happened in their family. And you saw it play out,
yeah,
in a very gruesome way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whatever happens, you know, in the next legislative session, when this will undoubtedly come up, because the president's right, this is the fourth time that this has happened since he's been president.
Mm-hmm.
That is a scary amount. I don't think the last time I was this concerned, at least felt this way, was Columbine.
Yeah.
And the reason I did that, now you'll be like, Josh, weren't you in college in Columbine? Yes, I was. But the reason I was concerned about it was because that summer, the summer before that happened, because that happened like in the fall semester
mm-hmm.
of 1998.
Actually, no,
it was 98.
It was 99, I think.
Well, regardless, I was a camp counselor that summer.
Yeah.
And, or maybe it was spring of 99. I can't remember.
Yes.
Spring
yes,
of 99.
Because it was April.
Yeah. Okay. So that's right. It was. So, but I was a camp counselor that previous summer in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my campers were from the Littleton area,
mm-hmm.
which is where Columbine High School is located.
Right.
And I freaked out.
Sure.
And I found, email addresses or phone numbers. I can't remember exactly what, but I found, and I tried contacting, you know, some of them were older campers, you know, mm-hmm. like teenagers or fellow camp counselors. And I was like, are you guys okay? I just want to know that you're okay. And they were. No one I knew even went to that school, but
yeah,
still, I mean, I just remember watching that play out on television. And but my reaction wasn't like, let's get rid of guns. My reaction, especially because when you found out about it, I was like, these kids were recluse. They withdrew,
mm-hmm.
and they had some serious issues that needed to be addressed and were ignored.
Right. Well, I think.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I don't know if you saw it, Ace of Spades, I had a post up about this yesterday, and he quoted actually a woman who posted a blog, I think she posted it on Saturday, and the title of it was, I Am Adam Lanza's Mother, and it wasn't
yes.
that she was trying to, did you see that?
That's the one that my wife read.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't that she was trying to impersonate Nancy Lanza, she was basically saying, this is my child that I deal with, and describing a 13-year-old boy who's got severe issues, and that she's to the point of being very fearful
mm-hmm.
of him hurting himself or her or other family members and doesn't know what to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And jail isn't the answer. As you put it in the article, jail isn't the answer for someone who loves his Harry Potter books and Snuggies. And, you know, he's still in some respects a little boy, but he's clearly a very troubled individual.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we don't have a very good structure or system on the state level, and you know, in any level in this country, that's designed to deal with people who have this level of problem, you know, this level of disturbed behavior. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's, I don't know, I'm certainly not an expert in the field, but you know, one of the thoughts that has occurred to me over the past few days is there's this sort of, you know, and I understand if you're the parent of a disabled child, I can totally understand you want them to have as normal a life as possible. Mm-hmm. And you want them to be mainstreamed if it's possible. I totally can understand that. But public schools on one end and jails on the other are not necessarily the right place for individuals who are as disturbed as this woman was describing her son.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
And I think we need to have a very frank, very calm discussion about how we deal with mental illness. And it's, of course, it's a broad spectrum. There are all kinds of mentally ill people that, you know, function in society and still make it through and certainly are no harm to themselves or other people. But there are people that definitely need to be focused on. Mm-hmm. And their issues need to be addressed in a way that protects them and protects those around them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, you know, we don't know enough yet. We don't know what kind of help you know, they tried to get for Adam Lanza. We don't know exactly what his issues were. By all accounts, he was never in trouble with the law.
Mm-hmm.
And for him being 20 years old, you know, you would expected some sort of criminal behavior leading up to this. There's a lot of questions, but I think this, if nothing else, should spur people to really stop, take off the gloves, put the lives of those children and anybody else out there who could be in harm's way first, and really look at, okay, what are the causes here? What are things that can be done that could possibly prevent this? Not just slap a Band-Aid on it, make us all feel better, yay, we've done something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But this absolutely does. I think we need to be taking a very careful approach with this.
Mm-hmm.
But that whatever we do, we need to be focusing on rehabbing people or trying to or even being able to distinguish some of these signs, these warning signs beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a lot of talk about, you know, stigmatizing things. We don't want to stigmatize things. We don't want to stigmatize people with mental health issues. But we do want to make sure that they get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Before something like this happens again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your state can have loose gun control laws. They can have strict gun control laws. Obviously, that has nothing to do with it, you know, with how someone gets a weapon.
Right.
Because most of the time, these weapons are acquired legally.
Right.
Regardless of the strength of the gun control laws in the state, they're acquired legally.
Well, as fate would have it, here they absolutely were. And mm-hmm. not only that, but he was blocked from obtaining a weapon 3 days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to himself and wasn't allowed to because he didn't want to sit through the waiting period and he wasn't old enough. So actually... Yeah.
He stole his parents.
Right.
Yeah, he acquired it illegally. People,
right.
It's going to happen.
So, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
Well, we should... We'll make a quick hard transition here.
Yeah.
We don't have much time left, but... We do at least want to address Tim Scott.
Yeah.
So let's end the segment on a happy note. On a happy note.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives are elated that Congressman Tim Scott has been chosen by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley to replace Jim DeMint in the U.S. Senate, at least in the interim until the next election
right.
Is held. But fantastic. This is a great choice. Of course, liberals had their natural reaction, primarily being token. He's a token.
Yeah, that's not demeaning in any way.
Oh, no, not at
or
all.
Or racist.
Yeah, take that, Hasbro. Oh, wait, if that segment didn't air in this show, you won't
it
get
won't
that joke.
Sense.
Anyway,
I knew what you meant, Josh.
Thanks, Susie. But yeah, great news. Tim Scott is replacing Jim DeMint for the time being. And yeah, liberals just happen to react. I encourage everyone to check out Twitchy. And they have some priceless priceless comments, including cheer the token black. He Jones, Michael Steele, Herman Cain, Clarence Thomas, Alan West, and Condoleezza Rice. No impact on blacks voting for GOP. Another House hashtag Negro. from lovely lady PA. Awesome hashtag or awesome Twitter name. Token Negro used there. Also using a little bit of in another tweet, using some stigma here. Lord, Nikki Haley picking a token for Senate Scott to say they have a black. Lord, LAWD.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because it's not like he already has an established political career, and it's not like he already, you know, has been making strides as a congressman or in any way earning anyone's respect. He just got picked because...
Of course. I mean, this is a guy who took out a South Carolina icon's son in an election. He beat Strom Thurmond's son. Strom Thurmond's son is 80, all right? And it... at least we think he... I don't know. I'm just guessing there. Because what? Strom Thurmond was 150. But okay, Rita A. He is Uncle Ruckus. What the heck does that even mean?
I'm not sure. I don't even want to speculate.
And this one coming from a local tweeter here in Indianapolis. Gee, courtesy of the South Carolina GOP, the nation gets Tim Scott, an ultra right wing Tea Party devotee, U.S. senator who's black in skin color only.
I like that. I love the bino bit there. That's new.
Yeah, that's definitely new. And that apparently caught the wind of Tony Katz and Warner Todd Houston and made it onto Drudge. So check that out. Check it out on Breitbart. So you can see more of this stuff on Twitchy and Breitbart. But we are pleased as punch that Tim Scott is the next senator to the wonderful state of South Carolina.
Yes, and I'm not pleased in name only.
No. Me either. Me either. I am pleased that someone with the conservative credentials and someone who generally cares about the direction of this country. I mean, you know, yes, he's a Tea Party candidate, but Tim Scott has never struck me as someone who is in your face about it. He seems like he's honestly a man of the people.
Seems to be.
Yep, but apparently not to certain people. Just
I guess
In name only.
Anyway,
well, that does it for this segment. We will come back and wrap up the show. But I hope that you guys took a lot from this segment that we obviously kind of hearkening back. We need to be making this debate not necessarily about guns, but about mental health.
Yeah.
So, all right, you are listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
I walk with a fever in my blood, restless for a place inside your love. I've been trying to reach you for so long. I have failed you and I've done you wrong. But if I have to, I will walk all this earth to find you. Find you.
Hi, this is Mark Stein, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I want to possibly thank a guest, maybe, U.S. Senator Dan Coats, if he was actually able to be on the show. Again, that was all at the call of Senator Harry Reid. Anyway, Susie, where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at SmoozyQ or on my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie and at joshgillespie.com, where you can find the complete archive of Gillespie, I promise. I promise you, it will be updated to include this show. I promise you, it will happen.
Sorry.
I'm not lying, people. It will happen. Anyway. So, I want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. We will have the next 2 weeks off because, well, it's Christmas and then it's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Woo! Or New Year's Day. It's New Year's Day. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Well, so, yeah, we'll be taking the next couple weeks off. But anyway, thanks for tuning in tonight. I want to thank, as always, my co-host, Susie. So, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is all about. Lights, please. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. And the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not. For behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.